Good morning. This is Lydia Aranda. I am here, your host, on this wonderful Monday, May 19th. I can't believe how fast this month is swinging by. Matt, thanks so much for the opening news and for being with us all smiley this morning behind the glass. We seem to have been holding with our weather, but we're going to be a little bit warmer starting tomorrow. So everybody, please be aware, wear your sunscreen, drink lots of water. We're excited to have you here for another week. And we're going to start with our Rainmaker recap. Last week, we had guests January Contreras, the Executive Director of Children's Action Alliance, and Eileen Klein, the President of Arizona Chamber Foundation. We were talking a lot about wellness, about health care, about resources in our state through Access, Medicaid, SNAP that are so important to so many people, and the fact that we all need to be good advocates for keeping our Arizonan children, families, elderly, and businesses doing well and having affordability and access to programs and resources like that. And we talked about ways that folks could get involved, talk to their representatives locally and nationally, and to be good advocates to make sure that health care stays available for our moms and more. And with that, we are continuing this morning. Excuse me there. We are continuing this morning on the theme of wellness because May is National Women's Health Month. May is National Mental Health Awareness Month and a whole lot of other things. And so my first guest this morning is Dr. Francisco Moreno from the University of Arizona College of Medicine. Dr. Moreno, welcome. Bienvenido. It's so wonderful to have you in studio this morning.
Thank you, Lydia. It's my pleasure to be here.
So we're talking a lot about wellness in all of its capacities, healthcare, medical care, physical. By the way, May is also National Fitness, Activity, and Sports Month. So that's a new one I hadn't heard of before. And who knew that? But it seems like all those things tie together. Having good access to care helps us be able to get treatment or visit doctors whenever we need to. But also our mental health is extremely important in how we feel physically. That is your area of expertise, Dr. Moreno. Tell us a little bit about your functions at U of A as well as your profession in psychiatry.
Yeah, thank you. There's a couple of really important things among what you mentioned, which is, of course, mental health impacts physical health and access to health. Access to mental health, strangely enough, is not the same as access to general health. We have, for a long time in the field of psychiatry, been fighting for parity, which means you should get insurance coverage or access and Medicare coverage that also takes care of your mental health. However, it's not always kind of put in the same package. A lot of people that can go anywhere they want for urgent care or whatever, hospitalization or whatnot, cannot do the same thing for mental health or substance use disorder challenges, which is really unfortunate. So I'll just kind of go back and tell you a little bit of what I do. I was saying about psychiatry. I'm in psychiatry. I have been at the university since the early 90s. I started my residency program there in psychiatry and then stayed in the faculty. And it's very dear to my heart. For so many years, it's been an important part of what I do. But I also have a number of other administrative functions and research functions and teaching functions, in addition to seeing patients, that I'll be happy to say more about.
Well, yes, I think you have one of the things, and full transparency to our listeners, you and I have known each other for many years in our professional capacities and out in community, and we've tackled some fun health opportunities and projects together, and it's been such a pleasure to work with you. But I am always amazed at the very robust career that you have had in your specialty. So yes, let's tell our audience a little bit more, because I do know that you are at the U of A College of Medicine and you wear many hats and have over the years, not just a professor of psychiatry, but you have been focused on the career paths of the students that come into medicine. In fact, currently I think you hold, is it Associate Vice President of Student Engagement and Career Advancement? I think that's the latest title.
That is the latest title. Yes, of course. You talked about access, and it's very difficult to have access to care if we don't have enough doctors. And for decades, we have a major shortage of psychiatrists and many other specialties and primary care providers here in Tucson and all over the state. In fact, Tucson does a lot better than most other parts of the state. We have a lot of areas of healthcare shortages around Arizona and the whole Southwest. An important part of our mission has been, how do we get people to train that really feel connected to the needs of our communities? How do we get people that can help us take care of all of Arizona?
Right.
And that is what we have dedicated a lot of effort to. How do we invite people early on who have not felt invited? How do we support people that have not been prepared? People from places around our state that are educationally disadvantaged and whatnot. And also, how do we support the superstars that are rising from the get-go to make sure that they are competitive, ready to come into our health profession schools, the medical schools, the pharmacy schools, the nursing schools, and how do we get them ready to succeed as well? So once they, they have an interest in healthcare, we want to make sure that they get into the training, that they complete their training, and they're successful in their careers as well. So that's where the career advancement part comes into. How do we support them as they go through faculty or their careers outside of academia?
That's so fantastic and so necessary. And like you said, that is just on the part of connecting with the students that have already gotten in or have expressed interest in getting in. Maybe they start to interact with you and your colleagues and your departments before they get accepted, maybe as their undergraduates in studying, or maybe even high school students having an interest or displaying an interest or a curiosity about what it is to be going into the fields of medicine, healthcare, nursing, and the like. But let's talk a little bit more about you. So you came into, what triggered your interest particularly in psychiatry?
So I didn't grow up thinking that I want to be a psychiatrist. In fact, I thought psychiatrist was a little strange. I went through my training in Mexico, where I grew up, and my exposure to psychiatry in the professional sense wasn't an inviting one. But my wife and I were both living in the border and decided to, at some point, come to the U.S. There was an earthquake that kind of knocked down the hospital where I was about to start the specialty training in pediatrics. And so I went from wanting to be a pediatrician to getting a job in psychiatry at, back then, the Keno Community Hospital, which is now better south. And that was the beginning of my sort of identity transformation into a psychiatrist from a pediatrician. And I've loved it ever since.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, they say necessity is the mother of invention. It sounds like necessity here was that things had shifted. You needed to take on a role. And maybe that's what gave you the bug. You started working perhaps, or seeing a little bit more about what that field really is like, which I think is so much of a benefit when we talk about, maybe not just young professionals, but anybody who's pursuing a field and isn't quite sure. You know, they might have ideas in their mind of what exactly it means to be in whatever that field is, but you really don't know until you get in there and get your hands dirty and start seeing the other experts and maybe learning from those around you. Is that kind of the excitement that you had when you started that job, that really opening up more curiosities for you, I'm going to guess?
Yeah, well, I was very curious. In fact, I had trouble choosing what I really wanted to commit to in terms of a specialty. But it, that kind of openness, I think, that really helped me. And that's true for all of us, especially if sometimes we have a kind of a bias or a perception about something. And in my case, I had a bias against psychiatry. It didn't feel to me like medicine. But then again, having an opportunity to working with the patients and the providers, the whole team at the time, it was a time in which biological psychiatry was really a revolution. The perception that this illness lived in the brain, the fact that we have now discovered and had availability of resources like medications and other sort of non-pharmacological treatments that could actually really change the life of individuals affected by mental illnesses, anywhere from really severe depressions all the way to schizophrenia, and lives were being transformed by new products and new approaches. And that was a lot of hope. And, you know, at the time, seeing that people were a lot more than their disease was really inspiring to me. And having an opportunity to kind of play a role in that really got me excited about being in this field.
That's wonderful. You said a couple of things there. First of all, that to you early on, being in psychiatry didn't really seem like quote unquote medicine. And I would venture to guess that so many people think that also, which is what, not just around our country, but around the world. And that's perhaps why there's so much stigma about talking about mental wellness, mental health, and also mental crisis. Hopefully, it sounds like we've come a long way in expanding the communications about that and welcoming folks to pursue their mental health. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit more about when we come back from this first break. You're listening to Rainmakers on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, with Dr. Francisco Moreno. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. It's your host, Lydia Aranda, on Rainmakers, The Morning Voice, here on KVOI on a lovely Monday morning, May 19th. We were just listening to the tunes of Smokey Robinson and Quiet Storm. Thanks, Matt, for putting that on. What a lovely tune this morning. Today, we are continuing our focus on wellness and health, and in studio with me this morning is Dr. Francisco Moreno of the University of Arizona College of Medicine, and we've been speaking a little bit about his journey into medicine that started with an interest in pediatrics, and because of a job assignment, he started to learn a little bit more about psychiatry. And so, Dr. Moreno, you were telling us before the hour the kind of things that you started to learn by having the job, taking a job that puts you more into the psychiatry focus instead of the pediatrics focus, and ultimately it changed your career path. I loved what you were saying when you brought up that at first you were a little hesitant. It wasn't exactly your favorite area of practice because at first it didn't seem like medicine to you. But over time, you started to see how that all came together, not just in maybe diagnosing, but perhaps in treatment, and how ultimately the care of psychiatry gives people hope. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think like many other things, the less we understand, the less appealing or exciting a topic might be. And in many cases, it's not what we do not understand, but what we believe we know about something, which is often not always very well informed. And that was the case for me. There's a lot of stigma about mental health. And even within medicine, there was stigma about mental health as well. You would guess that, you know, physicians and nurses and everybody in the health professions world, talking about 30 years ago, would be all over addressing the mental health care needs of an individual. But that wasn't always the case. And I witnessed a fantastic evolution over the last 3+ decades in which within medicine and healthcare, we've really sort of brought mental health care as an important aspect of a whole individual's health. And really very intertwined with physical manifestations and vice versa. And it's very easy to see now that back in the day, there was a lot of concern about, well, you know, these are illnesses of the mind, these are challenges individuals are having, and there was a lot less conceptualization of this being a brain-based disorder or many brain-based disorders that could actually have brain and body-based interventions that could help us take care of them and really transform people's lives. And because of that, transform their families' lives and their whole communities around them as well.
Because, as we say, you know, it takes a village whenever we're talking about raising children or caring for people. And I have to imagine the psychological aspects, the mental aspects, challenges that might come up can't just be put into a handful of categories. I mean, the combination of things is as vast as every other type of health that we talk about, every other type of physicality or every other type of emotion or all those other things. And what I was thinking about a little bit when you were talking is nowadays, currently, one of the kind of trendy phrases is not trendy, but really a way of grasping that balance between our physical health and our mental health is when we talk about non-prescription approaches to keeping our health. And one of those is this concept of food as medicine. In other words, we are what we eat, but there are things we can eat that might help us. And just like we have allergies, that seems to be a concept that people understand is some of us are allergic to things and some of us are not. And with that, our body reacts a certain way. Well, I would venture to guess that if we are not aware of some of those impacts that the things we are ingesting are having on us, that doesn't just manifest in hives or a rash or a stomach ache or something like that, but it could really affect our mind. Am I off base there, or is that pretty true?
Absolutely. Whatever we put in our bodies and what we do with our body will have a strong impact in our overall health and our mental health. Mm-hmm. First of all, I wanted to acknowledge that a lot of people that may not have food security or maybe hungry, mm-hmm. are going to have a lot of impact in their mind and in a lot of different ways, because this is a very important social determinant of health.
Sure.
And then many of us in our community, in our country, we have a lot to choose from and a lot of abundance of not only choices, but amounts.
Yes. We are pretty fortunate in this country to have an awful lot of options.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the same amount of options are available to everybody. We do have food deserts in all of our communities, suffer through that. And then the aspect, especially these days, I think what's top of mind to people all over our country, particularly here in our state too, we hear about the rising cost of groceries and certain groceries. So if you have expense, and at the same time might not have access to a different availability or choice because you're limited with the stores or markets or fresh produce, for example, then that's a combination that can be tough.
Yeah. And then again, back to your question, of course, what we choose to eat has a lot of impact in how we feel. An important aspect of good nutrition includes making sure that we are not challenging our body in a number of ways. And one of the ways in which we often do that is we may be eating too much sugar,
mm-hmm.
Eating too much refined sugar, a lot of processed foods that can be stressful, pushing up insulin and sort of increasing cortisol and other levels. Those fluctuations in hormones that help us regulate metabolism can affect our anxiety, our stress. Of course,
affect
gaining
our
weight.
Sleep.
Definitely our sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What we put in our If you talk to a sleep specialist, they will tell you what to eat or not to eat at night, or what to drink. Caffeinated drinks, even certain teas. We often think, oh, it's a tea. Well, tea has
a lot of caffeine in it.
Yeah, if it's an herbal or whatever, then many of them have a lot of soothing, calming effects that in fact work like many medicines that help us sleep. And we can talk about that later on a little bit more.
Sure.
But definitely the same thing is true for alcohol. Mm-hmm. Many of us will enjoy an adult beverage, with food, or people might want to use that before they go to sleep. But also that has impact in mental health and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely what we eat, the way this is anywhere from the pleasure that we derive from it, from preparing it, from enjoying it, from ingesting it, and then how our body reacts to it from the get-go can be really impactful. So, looking at what we eat and why we're eating it and how much of it we're eating, it's a good idea.
Great. Well, we are getting close to being able to go to our next break, so I think we're going to leave it there for just a moment. You've been listening to Rainmakers. We're speaking with Dr. Francisco Moreno, and I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. Please stick with us till after the break. Come on back.
Hey, remember to like and follow 1030 The Voice on Facebook. Just go to 1030 The Voice. You can see upcoming show lineups and information about upcoming events. 1030 The Voice. Hit that like button. Morning Voice will be right back.
And we're back. You're listening to Rainmakers. This is Monday, May 19th, and I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. We've been speaking about May being Mental Health Awareness Month and National Women's Health Month, among other things. And our guest this morning for our first segment is Dr. Francisco Moreno. We were talking a little bit about your journey, what got you interested into the specific field of psychiatry as you were pursuing your medical studies in your residencies. And in our last segment, we were chatting a little bit about the approaches to mental health being tied also to our physical health. Talked a little bit about nutrition, about sleep, and some of those aspects. Tell us what else we should be thinking about when we are assessing our own mental health status, and how we might, what are some warning signs that we might need to visit with someone to maybe let off some steam, or just to make sure that we're doing well with our mental ability.
Great. Thank you again, Lydia, for that opportunity to talk about things that can help us stay healthy, and then when do we need to see somebody? So briefly, I'll tell you, of course, when you mentioned sleep, that's one of the things that it's easiest for us to neglect. Mm-hmm. We put it off and then we don't feel rested. We don't always give ourselves enough time to sleep. many people have trouble sleeping no matter how much they do to really kind of help it up. And so taking care of that is also very important. Exercising regularly is a good idea. Stress is very real, and exercise is a great stress reliever.
Sure.
It's also a good time to do some mindful health care, mindful exercise. A lot of our audience may be people that do physical work, and it's like, well, I want to rest when I'm not working. Well, there may be things that you could be doing also to make a pleasant opportunity for a different kind of exercise that is mindful and it feels to you as taking care of yourself.
Sure. I know that recently you and I were at a meeting with some other community leaders and for an advisory board that we both serve on. And we were all talking about things that we each do. We were sharing in our icebreaker, if you will, some activities that help us either tune into our mental status, might be our mental status, our mental well-being, and things that we do to also help free that up. And I remember several folks around the room talking about some things that others might not think is exercise, but they were talking about in cooking that they, when they're kind of needing to relieve their mind, they do that during cooking when they're chopping vegetables, or others when they're doing some sort of activity that might seem a little mundane or repetitive, but it's a way that helps them start to clear the clutter in their mind.
Yes, absolutely. And doing physical activities that are repetitive can be very helpful. And mm-hmm. for somebody, chopping vegetables could be a nice stress reliever. We all can do what we can with our physical ability and the time and the opportunity that we also have to be sure. there. But, you know, having a pleasant walk in a place that looks green, you know, where we can maybe see a few trees or bushes at least, is always something that can hit our mind differently. One of the other things that that often people talk about is having a pet,
yes.
enjoying a pet. And so pets have become so important in our lives. And it's not only having a pet, but it's taking care of a pet, and it's getting close to your pet. And it's providing care for somebody, but also enjoying their presence, their company, their quirks, the things they do, staying connected with other people, having friendships and having meaningful connection with the people around you,
mm-hmm.
dedicating time to be in the mindful presence of the people we care about. It's a great stress reliever, having a chance to share it with other people.
Sure.
And one of the pieces that I talked about is true for a lot of professionals is the balance of work and life. For doctors and nurses, people working in the healthcare industry, we rarely take care of ourselves.
Sure.
And that happens to a lot of people and moms and women in general. We often see ourselves as caregivers and as people that need to be giving and getting up and giving up some of us, and saying no becomes like a bad thing, and setting boundaries is a bad thing. And all of this is about really taking care of ourselves. It becomes really, really very important.
And being able to not only set boundaries, but and we don't always know how to do that. So I think being able to talk to someone who might be a coach, a trainer, in clergy, someone else who might be in the same industry and knows what it's like to maybe suffer that imbalance a little bit, and finds tips and tricks on how to do that, kind of a life hack, if you will. That's
hey,
kind of
Lydia. Why don't we invite our audience to do that this week? Talk to their teams about what
idea.
Do you do for life balance,
yeah.
and even just thinking that what. I need to balance.
I love that. Yes, listeners, whether you are at home, whether it's with your neighbor or your friend, or if you're out at work, have that conversation. Bring it up in the break room. Share it on a chat. Maybe just get with even at least one other person and ask them, what do you do for that work-life balance, or for that family balance versus social balance? And you might learn something that is a new way of finding that balance. Is something that you didn't know, or something you could try if you're not finding that yourselves. I love that. Thanks, Dr. Moreno.
And also a shout out to the supervisors and the bosses. Don't think that we're giving people an excuse here to take it easy or say no to you. You got to take care of your employees. We have to make sure that we have machines that are ready to perform. And if people are well taken care of, they're going to do a better job.
That's true. So. That's true. I think there are many ways that can happen, and supervisors and company owners and business owners are always thinking, how do you balance productivity with also just pleasantry and being able to be human? And I think that's part of what mental wellness is about, is how do we tune in to our human self?
Yes.
When people want to maybe reach out on a little bit more professional or well-giving wellness, taking care of themselves, What kind of resources? I mean, we've heard that people can go see a psychologist, a psychiatrist, in other words, make an appointment and go see a counselor, if you will. But are there other resources before somebody just makes that appointment? Because it might be a little daunting. You know, who do you pick? Do you just pick a name out of the phone book? Do you just look somebody up on the internet? Or what are ways that people might find a professional to help them?
A great question, because it's a difficult thing to get into. Once we even decide and get motivated and decide to kind of move our fingers to do something or walk somewhere or call somebody, it's not always easy to get in to see somebody. And then if we don't know who to say. So start with the basics. Make sure we have people around us and we start talking about, I think I might need to see somebody. If you don't have an option to talk to individuals, one of the first options in healthcare is always call your primary care team. Mm-hmm. Assuming we have established care somewhere, which is also not a very safe assumption, calling the people for whom we do any kind of healthcare is the right thing to do. Most of the time, we'll be a medical assistant or a nurse that will be screening calls and whatnot, and then they will be getting you in to see your primary care doctor. For a lot of the issues that we deal with, insomnia, anxieties of different kinds, depressions of different kinds. We often have the first step at care by a primary care provider.
Okay.
Often that includes counseling that may be facilitated within the healthcare office or the use of medications that can be safely prescribed by a non-specialist. And then from there, we can escalate to seeing a specialist, and it may be facilitated by your primary care team if you have one, or we may be looking for resources online. Again, there's always the checking to make sure that your insurance will cover for that provider, right? But there's a site. Can I
absolutely
mention a site on, online?
It's
called Psychology. Today, they have a listing of providers, not just psychologists, but nurse practitioners, PAs, psychiatrists, counselors of different backgrounds, psychologists, of course, that are available in town and other parts of the state, and many people that also will allow you to have care remotely, digitally, right through a link on your iPhone or your computer, provided that you're in the state of Arizona. Most of them can provide care for you within the state.
That's a great amount of flexibility there. And you said some very important things, and we'll continue the conversation as we come back from break. But Psychology Today offers a lot of resources of where to connect with specialists, but also how to check if you've got the right kind of insurance. Your primary health care provider can give you that. And if you don't have insurance, Access can help you, and we want to make sure that stays available. So we're going to talk about all that when we come back from break. You're listening to Rainmakers with Lydia Aranda. And we're back on Rainmakers this Monday, May 19th. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, for the morning show of the Morning Voice. The Monday show, Monday segment of the Morning Voice. My caffeine's just barely kicking in. It's been exciting this first hour that we've been speaking with Dr. Francisco Moreno of the University of Arizona College of Medicine about May being National Mental Health Awareness Month and the kinds of things we can all do daily to make sure that we're keeping our mental health strong. And if we need some help, in our last segment, we were just talking about different resources. One, Dr. Moreno, that you brought up, and thank you again for being here in studio, is psychologytoday.com. It's a website that I pulled up during the break, and I'm looking at it, and it seems like there are so many links and ways that we can do our own kind of research, or if we're trying to look up some resources for family members or loved ones and friends, we can find a therapist. There's a magazine with different articles on mental health. And there are so many other resources as well. It's not just up to a doctor or a nurse or a psychiatrist or psychologist alone, but rather everybody works as a team, blending your medical health with your mental health And part of that means also knowing what other resources are available in community. Tell us about some more. I know NAMI comes to mind. I think we have some resources for suicide prevention hotlines these days. What else should we be thinking about?
Absolutely. So NAMI stands for National Alliance for Mental Illness. Mm-hmm. And in Southern Arizona, that is NAMISA. So NAMISA.org is a great website where you can find a lot of resources. But most importantly, NAMI itself is an organization that has been created to support people with mental illnesses. And it's just an organization of like loved ones and people living with lived experience in mental health,
sure,
of course, which is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And they provide education, they provide support. There's a number of groups that they have where people, family members, to support teachers, to support peers. They have a, there's resources here in town. You were talking about, there's a team of individuals, and of course, the people living with a mental illness themselves are a fantastic resource for other people. There's an organization here in town called Hope Inc. And you may also find information about them in the NAMI website,
okay,
which has peer support for each other. It's like what's called a warm line. But then, of course, we have the crisis lines,
yes,
right?
And so, crisis is different than people needing care. There are levels of it, right? There's,
yes,
sometimes,
absolutely,
you might just have an interest or be proactive. Other times you might need some warm intervention. And then there's the hotline for crisis.
Yeah. And even if you want to, if you're in need of finding just general information, calling NAMI could be a good idea. The crisis center here in Tucson that's now operated by Connections, Arizona, it was really created with a no wrong door, no wrong line access option. So,
oh, good.
You know, you come in, you bring your loved ones in there, or you allow others to kind of support you on your way in there. You can come in as a walk-in a lot of the time. It's best if you call always to make sure that you're preparing and preparing them. But people can walk in. This is right behind the Banner University Tucson South campus is.
Oh, okay.
By the stadium.
Sure.
In that area, we have the County Abrams Building, and then we have the
not too far from
Resource
our studios,
Center.
In fact.
It is not very far
just
from
down
the studio.
The road.
And so there, of course, is...
No, go ahead. We're going to be wrapping up here really quickly, but you were about to say there, of course, is no wrong approach to taking care of your mental health, I think.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, 911, when you call 911, a lot of people are concerned about, you know, what can be the complications of that. You can always ask for a CIT-trained officer to visit with you, crisis intervention training, fantastic partners within the police department. Our TPD and sheriffs here in town have a lot of support for that.
Well, this hour has gone by so quickly. I'd love to have you back, Dr. Moreno, to speak more about mental health and knowing that mental health care is health care, and we need to have access to services and resources. And part of it is simply starting with asking.
My pleasure. Thank you again, Lydia.
You're listening to Rainmakers on KVOI, and stick with us. After the break, we'll have our second segment.
Morning Voice will be right back, right after the news.
Good morning. This is Lydia Aranda, your host for The Morning Voice, and the Monday segment we call Rainmakers. Today is Monday, May 19th, and we are here in studio. We just wrapped up a first hour with our guest, Dr. Francisco Moreno. We were talking about May being National Mental Health Awareness Month, and a lot of other months, too. May is National Women's Health Month. It's National Older Americans Month. It's National Pacific Islanders Month, and many other things having to do with sports and fitness and nutrition. And therefore, I am so excited to continue the talk about wellness and community by having my second hour guest, Kristen Garcia Hernandez, who is the CEO of Girl Scouts Southern Arizona. Kristen, welcome to the studios.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's very exciting to have you in studio. I'm a past Girl Scout. I'm a former board member of a different board, but here in our state, the Arizona Cactus Pine Council, for many years. Yeah. And Girl Scouts is doing so many things. And here in Southern Arizona, the Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona turns 90 this year, right? And is celebrating all year long with so many different aspects about the Girl Scouts. Tell us a little bit, before we get into all those formalities, tell us a little bit about your journey that got you to the Girl Scouts and the CEO role.
Yeah, well, I was a very active kid. I participated in a lot of clubs and sports and what have you, but I was not a Girl Scout growing up, surprisingly. My mom was and my sisters were. It just, at the time, I just, never came to be. So I like to say I was late to the party. I had an opportunity when I moved back to Tucson, originally from here, to come and run the Girl Scout cookie program. And when they approached me about the job, I thought, my goodness, female empowerment, entrepreneurship, sign me up. I would love to. And 17 years later, it's been such an amazing journey. And, at the end of the day, when you drive home and you reflect on your day, I'm so grateful that I'm in an organization where what we do each day matters and uplifting young women. And it's an honor to be working for 5,000 girls across Southern Arizona.
Well, you're doing a great job at it. And congratulations on that success all these years. I love what you touched in about female empowerment, girl empowerment, women and girls, enlightenment, strength, leadership development, touching in on entrepreneurship, so important, all of those skills, and learning how to also be a team, whether that's a team of one or a team of many. All of that skills development and resources available for girls and women come right there from the programs you're running at Girl Scouts. And that's a big part of women's health. That's exactly. A big part of keeping our mental health, as we were talking about earlier, and being able to teach each other how to be stronger, how to be resilient, mm-hmm. what it means to be a good listener. And that's part of leadership and leadership development. And all of those things come together with not just programming, but the ideas that come from other Girl Scout alums, if you will, because it runs the gamut of ages. Why don't you remind our listeners, Girl Scout starts pretty young and goes into young adulthood as well.
Correct. So we begin serving girls as young as ages 5, and we go all the way up through 18. And then from there, you just shift as an adult Girl Scout, and the journey continues the journey goes on endlessly.
Sure. People can come back as a volunteer. They can be a troop leader. They can be a donor. They can be a speaker, maybe host an event.
Absolutely. We like to share that you don't have to be a troop leader to be involved with Girl Scouts as an adult. You can give back in so many ways, whether that's just sharing your subject, if you're a subject matter expert in a particular area and you just want to share your skill set, or you just want to come in and pop in and out, if you will, or once a year, twice a year, anything that you want to give and participate in, we welcome adults. As you were talking about mental health, something that really connects our work is there's truly an epidemic amongst our youth and our youth navigating emotional and mm-hmm. mental well-being. Mm-hmm. And studies do show that it only takes one adult, one caring adult outside of your immediate family to believe in you, to support you, and to cheer you on, to make a significant difference in a child's confidence, as well as their sense of belonging. So with that, we welcome all adults to come in and be a part of that support network for our young kiddos.
I think that's such a powerful inclusion that you have. And I'm also wanting to remind our listeners and remind other folks who may listen in future to this episode that you don't have to be female to be involved in Girl Scouts. And correct. I'm remembering a slogan from, it's probably at least 15 years ago, but there was a slogan around our state, are you man enough to be a Girl Scout?
And we still have the shirts.
Yes, I love it. And I remember that was a big thing when I was on the board. And part of that was to recruit not only board members at the councils, but to also pay tribute to dads, you know, mm-hmm. dads of girls. And my father was very supportive. He's the one who encouraged me to be a Girl Scout. So, you know, being man enough to be a Girl Scout, I think, is a great theme. And so important also for, like you said, just takes one caring older or adult or older sibling even or someone who's a near peer, but, you know, has a little bit more perhaps experience and wisdom to right. care for a child and to pay attention and encourage that. And that can be the game changer for life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're grateful for that. You know, you have your teachers, you have your coaches, and I consider those adults that support our girls life coaches.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, cheering you along the way. Helping you see your potential. We talk a lot in Girl Scouting. Yes, it's empowering, but we believe the girls have everything in it themselves, that we really just help them bring that out to empower themselves. And again, just that additional support from an adult who's loving, supportive, and to say, hey, I got you, kiddo, fly. That's all it really takes.
Yes, fly, baby, fly. So important to all of the other kinds of trainings and lessons. And Girl Scouts, as a phrase goes, it's much more than cookies and camping, although the cookies and the camping experiences both mm-hmm. teach so many skills. In cookies, that's all about finance. That's about understanding business and
absolutely.
Building those business plans, those business skills. How are you going to sell? Who are you going to sell? Did you cover your bases? Did you deliver on time? Did you bring in the money? Because mm-hmm. there's a cost for buying the supplies and then recouping that cost in the sales. So many important lessons come out of that. What has been your favorite part of the business or entrepreneurship and leadership and team development that comes from cookies that you see happening here across Southern Arizona? Because it's not just here in Tucson or Pima County. It's Graham, Greenlee, Cochise, Pinal, Santa Cruz, and Yuma, right?
Correct.
All
yeah.
seven counties.
Absolutely. And frankly, I think I would need more than an hour to cover all of the stories. But I will share this. It's been, you know, I've been around for 17 years, going on 18, and it's been incredible to watch the littles, to see them a little nervous, not sure that they can even make eye contact, might be looking up at mom to help with an assist, and to watch them go from doing everything they can to muster up the courage to say hello and give a pitch, to then fast forward a few years later where you have our teen Girl Scouts not going door to door in neighborhoods, but actually going to businesses and doing their pitches to the business and asking, you know, how many cases, not boxes, how many cases can I sign you up for? Having a clientele list, being really strategic with their marketing plan. Mm-hmm. Are they going to use social? Are they going to share their online store? Are they going to circle back to groups and organizations that want to donate for Cookies for Our Heroes and being strategic in that way? It's really beautiful to see them blossom and go through all of the different phases. And I'm seeing that now even in my daughter as a young Girl Scout who is typically shy with new faces, really just getting the courage to share what they're passionate about and why they're selling cookies and what they're raising money for and what they plan to do to give back to the community. And I loved earlier, as we got started, you said whether you're a team of one or a team of many. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly it. They learn to work together towards their troop goals. You know, they're raising funds. And on a side note, I have a love-hate relationship with the Girl Scout cookie program. I believe it and I love all that we do. But we're highly dependent on the cookie program
sure.
because of the lack of philanthropy that supports girls and women. And they're recent studies show that of every philanthropic dollar given in the U.S., only 2.5% goes to serve organizations that are serving girls and women. And if you take out reproductive rights out of that equation, it's less than half a penny.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. So the Girl Scout Cookie Program started in 1917 when our founder was having difficulty getting anyone to invest in this organization serving girls. She came across a troop doing a bake sale, and fast forward, here we go. She said, all right, that will fund our experience. And even today, in 2025, we're still dependent on it. But I share this, that yes, while we're highly dependent on this cookie program, the girls are taking it in strides, and there's ownership, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got this. I'm going to take my business to ensure that I can fund all the activities, the camps, et cetera, that I want to do, and as well, as giving back into the community and reinvesting those proceeds back into our local town.
Because philanthropy is a multi-directional street. It is not even just two-way. It kind of goes around the corners and off into other lanes as well. Such an important skill and lesson to teach everybody mm-hmm. about how to pay it forward.
Right.
And that's one of the things that comes out of that. Philanthropy, you just opened up such a topic. It is true that there is not enough philanthropy that supports girls and women, and it's why it's so much ever more important now to make sure that we are teaching our up-and-coming generations, as well as our colleagues and those who have come before us, about advocacy, because mm-hmm. that's how you get the message out as well. And it can be philanthropy is bred out of support or advocating for something, and then when the support is needed, there it is. And those are the two sides of a similar coin, and we need it to be able to function in community and help support those kind of programs that keep our community thriving. Exactly. So we're going to take a quick commercial break here. Kristen Hernandez from Girl Scouts Southern Arizona, nice to have you here. We'll be back in a moment. And we're back. This is Lydia Aranda, your host of Rainmakers, which is the Monday segment show of the Morning Voice here at KVOI Studios in Tucson, Arizona. It is a wonderful, beautiful May morning. And in studio with us for this second hour segment is Kristen Hernandez, the CEO of Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona. Kristen, nice to have you in here this morning.
I'm so honored and excited to be here.
We have been talking about the importance of communities investing in girls and women. And so many studies have shown that investing in girls and women help whole families, help businesses, help communities thrive. And the Girl Scouts of our nation, as well as the Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona, have been doing this for a very, very long time. I think Girl Scouts is about 108 years old, 109, something like that.
113.
Oh, gosh, yes, you're right. But here in Arizona and in Southern Arizona, this organization and council is celebrating 90 years. Part of the 90th anniversary includes events, includes acknowledgement, and includes some awards. I'm hearing a lot about 90 women honored or 90 women who will be honored. Tell us a little bit more and clarify for our listeners here what that initiative is about, how that campaign is going, who is honored, who will be honored, and how people can get involved.
Absolutely. So we wanted to do something fun. And, Girl Scouts as a movement, while we serve our kiddos ages 5 through 18, as I mentioned earlier, you're never done being a Girl Scout. Once a Girl Scout, always a Girl Scout. And it's really beautiful to watch young women grow and develop to become champions in the community who do really incredible things. And also for those adults who join into the Girl Scout movement, as I mentioned, like myself, a little late to the party, but who really have a passion to give back and to make a difference, and who are also role modeling for our young women. Certainly within Southern Arizona, having a diverse population between our Latina community and, our indigenous communities and what have you, it's really important that girls can see themselves in the adults that are doing really phenomenal work and are achieving greatness in life. So we thought, what a beautiful way to culminate 90 years and honoring 90 women who have made great impacts into our community. Oftentimes, our girls look at life, and due to social media and other outside influences, they look at things and see perfection. Right. I need to be this. I need to look a certain way. I need to achieve this. I need this under my belt. I need great grades. I need to excel in athletics, etc. And we want to highlight and showcase that, yes, you have success, but let me tell you, baby, there's going to be the valleys as often as the highs and the peaks and the mountains. We want to show really authentic leadership, and that means overcoming obstacles, and that's a part of life. So we wanted to highlight and honor 90 women who have had a phenomenal journey along, whether that's in their career, in their home life, in their personal life, or just giving back to the community. We wanted to highlight 90 wonderful women. And we're going to use certain platform, or I should say the certain criteria that Girl Scouts has, you know, champions in STEM, entrepreneurship, outdoor, and life skills, and who really role model the principles of giving back and being a sister to every Girl Scout and lifting each other up, etc. So we're really excited about this. We want to honor 90 unique women, showcase their life story and what have you, and then also embrace the sisterhood. Oftentimes as adults, we get so busy. But Lydia and I are, you know, I'll share with the audience and our listeners that Lydia and I are connected into a Latina network of professionals, and how beautiful it is to be connected in a sisterhood, to be able to count on one another, to be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, Lydia, I need help. I need advice. I just need an ear. We wanted to highlight that as well and showcase the sisterhood and lift up each other. And really celebrate 90 incredible women. It's going to be hard.
It's
going
to be hard to narrow it down to 90. Yes,
exactly.
But how fun that these 90, or from these 90, they can go out to another 90 and another 90. It's kind of that old commercial. I'm going to date myself. Everyone else is too young probably to remember this, but I remember a shampoo commercial that said, and they'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, and so on. And that really is what having a network is all about. Mm-hmm. So important to creating confidence and courage. Mm-hmm. For people, especially our girls, to follow their dreams, to have a dream, even to just have the dream, and then learn over time how to pursue it. And there are ups and downs in everything that we do, just daily life. Life is filled with that. And being authentic versus being perfect, mm-hmm. I think, is such an important lesson there. So in the support of girls with Girl Scouts, one of the things that I really love about your council is you very straightforwardly make it easy to find out for the girls and their families about not only the programs that are available, but also resources that are available should the girls need them in order to take to partake in the program. So those could be scholarships, stipends, maybe payment plans, because everything does cost something. Mm-hmm. And not everybody at every moment in time has that flexible of a budget. So it seems like there are an awful lot of avenues that girls can get help for, maybe enrolling or paying the advance fee for camp or something like that. Tell us how that's working. Are you seeing that's opening up the avenue for a lot more people?
Absolutely. It's really important for us to highlight that there is a perception often that Girl Scouts is only for the affluent girl, mm-hmm. for the families who have means, who have a capacity to volunteer in a troop and dedicate a lot of time and resources to Girl Scouts. But that's not true. In fact, a vast majority of our Girl Scouts, a significant proportion, are either middle to lower class families. And I share that because it's important that we highlight that every girl has the opportunity to participate in Girl Scouts, whether you need financial aid, you need assistance, regardless
maybe
of your
transportation
or your familiar situation, your familial. Yes, thank you. Folks might not know that we serve 5,000 girls across Southern Arizona. And of those 5,000, 2,000 girls we serve in our what we call staff supported programs. We go into schools that are typically low income, that have a high percentage of free or reduced lunches, and we serve girls year-long in after-school programs completely free of charge to families. Transportation isn't a barrier because we're going to the girls in their schools. We also work with girls who are involved in the foster care system, whether they're in a kinship program, they're in a group home, or they're in family placement. We serve all those girls, again, free of charge. We work with girls who are involved in the juvenile justice system, whether they're in juvie. Yes, we do Girl Scouts in juvie weekly, or if they're on a diversion program and out on probation or, involved in some capacity, we offer Girl Scouting to these girls. And then lastly, we work with girls whose mothers are currently incarcerated. Our Girl Scouts Beyond Bars program, where we serve girls whose mothers are serving time in Perryville Prison. We take Girl Scouts to prison every other week. year-round. And all of that's possible because of the financial support that we get from the community. Yes, from cookie revenue, but also from the philanthropic dollars that are given. We work hard to raise a lot of money so that every girl has the opportunity to engage. No girl's turned away due to financial barriers. And we make sure that every girl has access. It's incredibly important. Our program works and we stand behind it. And so we want to ensure every girl can join.
That is amazing to know. And I bet so many of those points are aha moments to our listeners right now. And the beauty is that folks can go back and listen to this episode even beyond today, and they'll be able to continue to find out these wonderful resources. I have a few more questions about that, but we're getting ready for another commercial break. You're listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Rainmakers, part of The Morning Voice. This is our Monday show for Monday, May 19th. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and we were just listening to the Sing Together songs of Girl Scouts and Be Prepared, kind of the themes of Be Prepared, the mission of being kind, and everything that Girl Scouts has meant for well over 100 years and 90 years here in Southern Arizona. Our guest this morning is Kristen Hernandez, who is the CEO of Girl Scouts here in Southern Arizona, which is the headquarters is located here in Tucson. But Kristen, I know for 17, almost 18 years, you've been in this role and leading Girl Scouts. And I'm so excited that Girl Scouts truly covers all of Southern Arizona, all seven counties. And that means a lot of communities that are outlying, that are smaller, that are rural, may not have the same kind of resources that we find here across the greater Tucson area. So that means Girl Scouts steps up. And Girl Scouts reaches the girls and meets them where they are. You were talking in our last segment about the many different programs and the approaches. And one of the things that really struck me, whether it's girls in foster care, whether it is girls who might be in juvie themselves or might have a mother that's incarcerated, they might be in an outlying school or may not be able to do a whole lot outside of school locations. And so you take your programs into the schools as well, so they don't always have to be at a different time, a time or a place that maybe might be harder for the girls or parents to get to. All those things make such a difference in touching the girls. Fantastic. And it comes to mind that what you're allowing these girls to have is not only time with each other and time to learn, but time to grow. In essence, that's me time. Mm-hmm. That's focusing on myself time if I'm a girl in Girl Scouts. Was that intentional or did that just happen to be a byproduct of good luck?
Yes and yes. Yes and yes, because for all those reasons. And also to have a safe space. Mm-hmm. A safe space, a brave space where they can be themselves, they can be authentic, they don't have to be, there's no stigma around, you know, as I mentioned, you know, their family scenario and what have you. And that's why we're a firm believer in having a girl-only space. Mm-hmm. So that our kiddos can feel comfortable and they can be unfiltered and just be covered in that that hug, if you will, of sisterhood. We are intentional that it is time to be your own person. And the beauty about Girl Scouts is it doesn't require a specific skill set or a talent. You know, sports are wonderful. I'm a big advocate for sports and interest level and you know, the music, the arts, what have you. But anyone can be a Girl Scout and you can have any passion and any skill set and find yourself there in Girl Scouts. And that's the beauty. It's open to every single person, every girl, I should say, and youth member. And I think what's important is that we provide these safe, brave spaces for them to just be a kid, to have fun, to learn.
So important. Being able to learn and being able to explore, being able to tap into imagination does require first being able to feel safe and feel brave. And mm-hmm. I love that you talked about brave space and safe space because it's not exactly the same, but they do depend on each other. Mm-hmm. And all of that really helps to establish individuals who have found a way to be more balanced, mm-hmm. who maybe understand or have gone through a little bit of adversity, or who are observing that adversity exists. Not everything is easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Correct.
It is, you know, things, hills and valleys happen to all of us and happen everywhere. And so we get through those individually, but we also get through them as a group, as a team, or just knowing that we have a team sometimes can give us that bravery, which means we're scared out of our mind, but we're still going to find that strength to move forward. And
exactly.
It takes that safe space to develop that, but also to come back and recoup from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I look back on those critical ages where they're learning resilience and how to, you know, how to really find the inner grit within them, right? And to persevere. And it's so important. And I'm glad that you said that, because life happens. Exactly. And we would be remiss if we didn't teach our children and our girls these coping mechanisms.
Right.
And again, as I mentioned before, the sense of perfection, it's non-existent. And so, yeah, so providing these spaces for the girls to fail forward, one of our mm-hmm. favorite terms.
Fail forward, fail up.
Fail often.
Yes.
Exactly. Because all of that comes learning experience and wisdom.
That's right. And that's why we need to take care of our girls and women to be able to keep on going. And that does not mean to the exclusion of our men and boys.
Absolutely.
It just means this is a focus.
Correct.
And with that focus, we're celebrating. I still want to give continue to give shout outs to the fact that 90 years, 90th
years.
Anniversary, that is amazing. And earlier you were talking about being able to acknowledge and recognize and pay tribute to 90 women with honors. Mm-hmm. And there is a nomination form on, you have a special landing page. Certainly people can go to Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona's website and find a whole lot of information about how to get involved, where to get involved, how to buy cookies, where to sign up for camp, maybe how to donate and support an event coming up or a program. But also there's a special landing page, and it's 90 years strong is what it's celebrating. And so the website, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to say it and then I'm going to spell it. It's 90 years strong Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona, and it's written out as 90 years, plural, strong, GSSOAZ.org.
Correct.
Did I get that right?
You did.
So listeners, please go there. If you forget all that or you didn't have a chance to write it down, go to the Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona webpage and you'll find the celebration of 90 years. And if you click on that, there's information about the honors and there's a place where people can nominate a fabulous woman, someone who deserves the recognition, meets the criteria, and you can just fill that out right on the website itself and submit it and see what happens.
Absolutely. And they didn't have to be a Girl Scout growing up. You know, as I mentioned, you
That's
can join
point.
The party later. So yeah, please, we welcome the nominations. We know there are so many remarkable women. As connected as we are, we know we don't know everyone. So think of all the incredible women in your lives that you would love to highlight and nominate. There's no limit to the amount of nominations that you can submit. And certainly we welcome more than one nomination for any one individual. But yeah, it's an opportunity to celebrate and connect, and it's one of our three key things key matters that we're hosting for our 90th celebration.
That's great. Now, I know that recently you've also just brought some, as you do frequently with your board of directors, there are staggered terms. So mm-hmm. you are every so often bringing in a handful of new board members as others term out or maybe have to leave for other reasons. Tell us about that. I think just a couple weeks ago you were celebrating that.
Yeah, we had our annual meeting, and I'm so thrilled that we brought on four additional adult board members, as well as two additional girl board members. Fun fact, we do have adult and girl members.
Yes.
Sitting on our board of directors. And our four include Lisa Sesma, GM of Casino del Sol. We're excited to have her, as well
yes.
as Karen Damshin.
Yay.
We also have Jessica Torres, who's owner of Blue Collar Steel, mm-hmm. representing the construction industry. Forgive me, Karen, an investment financial advisor. And then also Gina Torres from WAFA. Fed Bank in Yuma.
Yes.
So we're so thrilled. We have such a strong incoming class of dynamic and phenomenal, confident women. And then, as I mentioned, we also have two girl board members, so a total of four girl members who ensure that we have the girl voice front and center in every key discussion at the board level.
That's wonderful to know. Now, tell me about the girl board members. Are they active Girl Scouts, and is that part of the criteria when they are nominated for consideration to the board, or could it be any girl?
Correct. Girl Scout active members, high school age, okay. So freshmen through seniors. And for our girl members, it's only a one-year term, and they can renew as often. They could do all 4 years. But we want to provide that flexibility. We know our high school gals are so busy.
Yes, they are.
But it's a really beautiful introduction to governance.
Yes.
And having them be a part of financial conversations, legal conversations, compliant conversations, and strategic conversations, all the beautiful work and powerful, important work that the board does. So it exposes our girls, because that's, a big part of who we do. I keep saying a big part. Everything
is a big part. You do it bigly.
Yeah, we do a lot. It's a really fantastic opportunity for our girls to witness governance and see the important factors and the business side of running an organization that serves 5,000.
Fiduciary responsibility mm-hmm. is a big one. Governance takes on more than just being able to say, I have rank, or I'm yes. in charge, so to speak, whatever that means. Governance is an important role that forevermore we will play in our mm-hmm. in our roles in community, but also in our families. It teaches similar skills.
Yeah.
And learning about the how and where and why are important aspects about servant leadership, which is another aspect another development that comes out of participating in organizations like Girl Scouts or in the programs, and volunteerism, that mm-hmm. a lot of things are dependent about the goodness of volunteers, about the altruistic approach that we as people, as members of our community, whatever our community may be, that, you know, we hold that role and responsibility to give back. Sounds like you're wrapping it up with some great things there. We're about to go to our last commercial break, so stay tuned. There's more from Chris and Ed Hernandez when we come back. This is The Morning Voice, Rainmakers. And we're back on Rainmakers, the Monday segment of The Morning Voice here at KVOI. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and in this second hour segment, we've been speaking with Kristen Hernandez, who is CEO, many, many years CEO of Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona. Kristen, it's been so wonderful to have you in here this morning.
Thank you.
We have been talking all things Girl Scouts Southern Arizona, from the seven counties served to the kind of programs that bring the girls in, but also how important it is to be acknowledging 90 years. This is the 90th anniversary, and we've been talking about 90 years strong being the theme. And three of those elements, one we spoke about, 90 women honored, which is an ongoing nominations and recognition that'll be going on for the coming weeks and months. But also another element, 90 acts of service, and then wrapping up the year with the Scoutcella. Tell us about those two things.
Yeah, well, you know, we wanted to look at a few ways to celebrate, and certainly 90th anniversary is a big deal, and we wanted to celebrate in a big way. So honoring the 90 women, yes, that's one element. The second is having 90 acts of service. So we want to encourage the girls, and frankly, the community, to join us in participating in serving the community through, whether that be community service, helping out a project. On our website, there's a variety of ways. You can add a project that you would like to have
nice.
Others join, or you can see what our Girl Scout Council's doing or what our other troops are doing. And we're going to be recording that so we can show the impact of these 90 acts of service. I'm confident we're going to surpass 90.
I think so, too.
Absolutely. But again, a big part of being Girl Scouts is giving back to the community and mm-hmm. having impact and ensuring that we're serving others. So I'm really excited for that. And then we're going to conclude our 90th year with Scoutcella, a big party, a big festival. We have three local female acts, Sophia Rankin, Mama Cole, and Gigi and the glow. Wonderful. And we're excited to celebrate on December 6th, Saturday, December 6th. Mark your calendars and just have a fantastic, good time celebrating sisterhood, celebrating Girl Scouts and female empowerment.
And Southern Arizona.
And Southern Arizona, exactly. So the whole family's invited. There will be activities for all ages, young and adults. And again, 90 years is something certainly to celebrate. 90 years of empowering young women and building girls of courage, confidence, and character who make our world a better place and are turning into really strong, incredible women, serving the greater community and making a difference every day. So we're excited for these three elements. You are all invited and welcome to participate with us, community. We were intentional that it wasn't just an inside celebration, right, but rather certainly impacting the greater community.
Well, I can't think of a better example of walking the talk of what Girl Scouts intentionally seeks to teach, seeks to give opportunity for, and seeks to empower girls with, than these kinds of examples, especially those acts of service. What a great way to collaborate and also encourage donors or mm-hmm. supporters or stakeholders or collaborating partners. Lots of opportunity there that are going to keep our communities moving forward. And that's what Rainmakers is all about, is bringing attention to these things. So I hope that we have you back again.
Would love to.
Throughout the coming months so that we can showcase what's been going on since launching this. Kristen, it's been such a pleasure to have you here at Rainmakers. This is Monday, May 19th, and I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. Kristen Hernandez, CEO of Girl Scouts of Southern Arizona, absolutely making it rain for women and girls in our community at large. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lydia. Such a pleasure.
And for our listeners, we've got WIN coming up. And don't forget, tomorrow evening, Tuesday the 20th, is our eat and greet to come meet the Morning Voice personalities. And we'll be at Caruso's, a favorite place. Kristen, I know that that holds some background for you, you and your husband. I think you were proposed to there.
Yeah, we had dinner the night he proposed.
How nice. My parents went on their first date there. So Caruso's holds a special part for so many of us. We hope to see you out there if you can make it. Please spread the word. And again, thanks for being on Rainmakers. This is KVOI 1030 The Voice here in Tucson, Arizona.